Hey guys, welcome back to Yolitics. We're doing a story
about Bess today.
A story about what?
Bess. Do you know Bess?
No, I don't. What? That's a nice quarter zip, by the way, too.
Thanks.
That's another. Same. But that's another Christmas gift.
Was this one? No, this was before Christmas. It was a gift to myself.
Mrs. Wheeler's done well. You know, grabbing and you know what's nice is that you're actually wearing everything. So this is the second podcast in a row.
As opposed to not wearing anything.
Well, yeah. I mean, sometimes people give you gifts and you just leave it in the box or leave it in the closet.
True. Yeah. You know, it's amazing though how up on my wardrobe you are.
Because you don't wear things like that. You know, you come in t-shirts.
Like an old married couple now. You only recognize me if I'm, you know, wearing something different. You didn't even notice I got my hair cut.
Your hair is always the same, dude.
Yeah.
You always have that TV hair. But this is what's
fascinating. Wait, let me tell you who Bess is.
Who's Bess? Okay.
Bess stands for Battery Energy Storage System.
And that's what we're doing this episode on.
It is. And it sounds dry, but stay with us, because big things are happening there.
Here's what's great about Wheeler. So he set up the podcast. We're talking about battery storage, you know, how important it is to the grid and all. And we come over here, we get set up here, and guess what doesn't work?
My battery.
Guess what's dead as a doornail and doesn't work?
Of all things, my battery.
His battery's dead.
It's a metaphor for me in general. So like, my battery has just gone out.
I'll be asking all the questions in this podcast.
Charging. Yeah.
All right. So
that sounds great, actually.
Walk us into this one, man.
All right. So I'm going to walk us into this. I've already kind of dipped us into it because we're talking about Bess today. It's easy to remember.
Battery energy storage system.
Right. I put it in bold here so you can read it, too. Even with your eyes. And today we've got CleanView founder and CEO Michael Thomas joining us because Michael, you all do something that I haven't seen anyone else doing as comprehensively as you do, where you're tracking all the way across this country solar projects and wind projects and battery storage projects for different electric grids. And it's truly extraordinary what you all are able to catalog on your site. So I had to get you on here, and I invited you knowing that you're in Boulder, Colorado, and Colorado has some great local beers there. We're both having a Deep Ellum IPA today from Dallas. And I guess my question to you is, what are you drinking?
I'm having a protein shake since I just got back from the gym. So
I love it.
Yeah,
very Colorado too, though.
Oh my gosh, you know what, like, you're our aspiration, you know? You've gone to the gym and you're having a protein shake. What are we doing with our lives?
We're having a beer at 9 a.m.
Yeah, it's not going well.
So, you know what's great? I didn't know this. The site existed. It's cleanview.co, and it's fascinating because you guys, it's a clearinghouse of information here. And as a journalist, I feel like I should have known this information, considering how much investment there is right now in Texas.
But I introduced him to it, so, you know.
What stunned me is the map of battery storage. And you look at it, and you almost can't see Texas and California because they're all blued out with all the projects around here.
Dots
all over the map here. Go to cleanview.co, and you can, you know, anyone can go through this and you know, parse through it here. But walk us through some of this here. You guys track thousands of these clean energy projects all across the United States. And I'm curious about the single most important story this Texas data is giving you that lawmakers aren't necessarily sharing with the public.
Yeah, I think the most important story in energy in America today is arguably the growth of solar, wind, and batteries in Texas, because you traditionally think about renewable energy as this kind of hippie thing that people like myself and living in Boulder, Colorado would really like, and that it's something you do for the planet and it's a good altruistic thing. And Texas is a place that cares most about building large projects and infrastructure, building a large economy, creating jobs and revenue. And very few people, I think, in Texas are building these to save the baby whales, I guess. And so I think what it shows is that there's this energy transition happening in America where the world's largest almost creator or builder of these renewable projects is Texas, which is also the largest producer of oil and gas in America. And I think it really just speaks to the economics of these projects and the speed and scale which they're being built out at.
And Michael, what does it say about the politics of this when Republicans, of course, have rolled back big pieces of the Inflation Reduction Act that was signed by President Biden, passed by Democrats several years ago, including some of the incentives in there for solar and wind, for sure. But batteries survived. What does it say politically that Republicans allowed that to stay in there, where you have these, you know, big incentives for these big battery projects still across the country?
I think it really speaks to the importance of batteries in America's energy system today and in its power grid. I think there were probably a lot of people who would have liked to roll back some of those incentives for different political reasons and their different political biases. There were people that saw the batteries as sort of a part of the renewable projects and a part of what President Trump has called the Green New Scam. And yet it all remained intact. And I think the reason for that is actually illustrative in Texas, where, as all of your listeners will remember, there were a few years of really intense power shortages, where most famously Storm Uri, power just didn't show up. A study from FERC actually found that the majority of the problem there was natural gas pipelines freezing and gas infrastructure freezing, contrary to a lot of the popular narratives and a lot of the misinformation that was kind of shared primarily by your governor, actually, on TV. And so there was these shortages that encouraged a lot of people to start building, because Texas has a unique power market in that high power prices on an hourly basis are a sort of feature, not a bug. They are designed to pull in developers and encourage them to build. And over time, that kind of stabilizes. And so there was a couple years of these brownouts where in the summer, they were shutting off power for a lot of people. And then what happened in really just the last 1 to 2 years is there was this incredible build out of solar and batteries in Texas, bigger than almost anything other than China in the world, probably. And what that did was it brought online a huge supply of energy where over the last year, the grid operators have said that the risk of blackouts has gone from like 10% to less than 1%. They cited batteries as one of the key reasons. And so I think at a national level, a lot of people saw that and they said, I don't really want to be dealing with angry constituents who are upset about high power prices. I'd like to keep things affordable and cheap. And batteries are a really key way to do that, especially when paired with solar, which is one of the world's cheapest energy sources at this point, cheaper than fossil fuels.
Yeah, so we're looking at the fuel mix right now from the live ERCOT grid in Texas. So as we speak right now, natural gas is only keeping, 15% of the grid, contributing 15% to the grid right now. But solar and wind are vastly producing significantly more megawatts of electricity, you know, to charge Wheeler's laptop, to keep the lights on here, to power our camera and equipment. But here's what I still haven't heard yet. Are batteries at a point yet where if we go into a winter storm Uri situation, or another event like we had here recently with the sleet and the ice all over Texas, can batteries hold electricity, you know, much more than 24, 48, 72 hours? Is there long-term storage that we can use and tap into batteries?
Yeah, the short answer is no. It is currently limited to about 2 to 4 hours. And that's really why I think it's best to think about all of this as this energy transition, right? It's not a energy rupture or something that's going to happen overnight. It's something that is really meant to take place over decades. And fossil fuels play a really important role in the power grid today. They are the bedrock of modern civilization. And they have, you know, this unintended consequence, or externality, as economists would call, of polluting the air. And that leads to a lot of health issues for people, as well as increasing the temperature of the earth. But the challenge today is that battery storage technology is limited to this short duration storage. And so the role that it plays is basically in providing power at times of peak demand. So You think about a summer day when everybody's turning on their air conditioning in Texas. The power grid sees this huge spike in demand. And solar panels are often generating power when a lot of that demand is happening, because the reason it's so hot in your house is because the sun is shining and baking the earth. And so they're also baking those solar panels. But then the challenge really becomes from like 7 until 10 p.m. when everybody starts to go to bed, when the batteries start to kick on. And that's the role that they can play and the reason that they've been able to bring down prices so much and really help the grid. But the biggest challenge is really that seasonal storage and those long duration challenges. And that's the role that fossil fuels play today. And there's a lot of debate about what technologies could play that role in the future. That I'm happy to chat about some of those different technologies.
Michael, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the numbers here, just to give some perspective on this. The comptroller here in Texas put out something, I believe it was looking back at 2024, which is way dated now, especially when you start talking about batteries. Sure. But just in that 1 year, he said the comptroller's office said, excluding California, if you take California out of the mix, Texas has more battery storage than the rest of the U.S. combined, accounting for almost a third of all the capacity installed nationwide. That gives us an idea. And in 2025, it grew on steroids again here in Texas. And then lastly, ERCOT projects 178 gigawatts of battery planned in the years ahead. You know, nobody knows megawatts, gigawatts, you know, how many homes does that power, whatever. Let me just put this out there. That would be 2 times the highest electricity consumption day in Texas history, which was back in August of 2024. That's how much battery storage is on the books to potentially be built here in Texas. And I say potentially because not all of these actually happen. But man, that just gives you an idea. I mean, this is a mammoth scale that we're talking about here of interest in Texas in the battery industry, Michael.
Yeah, it always shocks me. Texas is actually kind of a problem in some of my work because I make charts a lot and share those charts. And what happens whenever I make one of these charts is that there's a massive line with Texas in how much solar they're building or batteries they're building or wind. And then all of the other states are kind of squeezed below. There's like 9 other states below. And these are states like California and Florida, very large states with tens of millions of people that are on their own building a lot. And you can kind of barely tell the difference between California and Florida, even though it might be a factor of 2. And so, yeah, Texas is just building an incredible amount. And I think the key reason for that is because power demand is growing in Texas at just a phenomenal rate. So we just did this analysis at the beginning of the year where we looked at how much power demand grew across the United States in 2025 compared to the year before. And in the United States, we found as a country, electricity demand grew by 2%. That was the fastest rate we've seen in decades. We've had flat power demand growth for a long time, and data centers and a few other reasons are kind of driving that. But in Texas, the rate was even higher. It was 5% that demand grew. And part of that's population growth that's happening. Part of it's the reshoring of manufacturing that's been happening since the Biden administration. And really the main reason is data centers. There's just been
I was going to say, we've got some gigantic ones going in here in Texas. And it's interesting because you all at your site there, cleanview.co, you don't just track electricity projects that are scheduled to come online. You also track huge electricity consumers in the form of data centers that are coming online across the country. And there again, you almost, you know, can't see Texas for all of the huge bubbles on there that represent enormous, I mean, mega data centers that are going in. And those are thirsty for electricity. And so that is a huge part of the consumption, even though some of them, as you all have reported, are building their own power plants to run the data center there. And as you all have reported, not always the cleanest power plants.
Yeah, there's just an incredible build out of data centers happening really across the country. But Texas is ground zero for that as well. And it's also part of the same reason that there's been so much solar, wind, and battery storage that's been built out, which is that it's much easier to permit a large infrastructure project in Texas than it is in the rest of the country. And we did some analysis on this, looking at power projects specifically, and we found that it takes about 3 years from planning to final construction to build a power project in Texas. In California, by comparison, a state that's really trying to transition and build a lot of this stuff, there's a ton of interest from policymakers and incentives. In that state, it takes twice the time. It takes about 6 to 7 years. There's some projects in California that we track that have been planned since George W. Bush was president in 2004 and are still not built. So in Texas, you can build things very quickly. And that's a part of the reason why data center developers really from around the world are flocking to the state to build these mega projects.
Yeah, like that California stuff, though, Michael, are they not built because of regulation in California or because of investment and demand for battery storage? Or like, what was the reason for that?
Yeah, it's purely the permitting regime, which is I sensed everybody's eyes glaze over as I said that word of permitting.
We're very exciting stuff.
Hey, we get into wonky stuff
Let me ask you this, though. You guys show 1,100 battery projects in development right now in Texas. How many of those will become reality? How many are just speculative?
So there's a few different ways of looking at it. Generally, developers will submit something like five projects for every one that they're going to build. So about 20% of them end up getting built. And the reason that they do that is because at different points on the grid, on these transmission lines around the country and around the state of Texas, there's different costs to connect because an upgrade might need to be made. So there's some places where if you get lucky and you kind of throw your lottery ticket in, you might get word back from the utility a year later and they say, hey, it's actually free to connect here, or it's going to be pennies on the dollar. And so that makes that project economically viable. You can also see the case, which we've seen tons of, and increasingly this is the case, where it costs as much to upgrade the lines as it does to build the actual power project. And so those projects get canceled. And so that's sometimes referred to as these like phantom projects, or you'll hear about the interconnection queues. And so you can kind of think of a rule of thumb of 1 in 5 will be built. But then as soon as a project reaches this interconnection agreement phase, that's one of the last phases before it's built, then the odds go up significantly. They might go to 80 or 90% plus, because at that point, the developer of that project is going to sign an agreement and put money on the table or write in a legal contract that they will pay tens of millions of dollars to upgrade those lines. And we're seeing a huge amount of those interconnection agreements being signed every day. I mean, we track Texas alone because it's a unique market. The amount of interconnection agreements, we have a feed of them on our site and in our app. And every single day I see a multiple 100-megawatt project that could power hundreds of thousands of homes being submitted.
And interconnection agreement, people might glaze over on that, but that's essentially just a way for the batteries to get their electricity to market. They need to hook up to the lines to get it to the grid, right?
Yeah, it's an agreement between the battery developer and the utility that says, hey, we've run this study and it's going to cost you this much per megawatt to connect to the lines. As the utility, we're going to have to go and build that. We're going to have to secure some cables and all of this and spend a lot of money. So we need you to sign the agreement and put down a deposit to say that you're going to be good for the money.
And then here's the other thing that I hear constantly from politicians. Republicans say, listen, we're not anti-renewable in Texas. We realize we have to have everything, natural gas, nuclear, wind, solar, battery. But they are anti-incentives for building any renewables. Republicans in this state and nationwide are. But with 1,100 proposed projects and 1 in 5 maybe becoming reality, it seems like these investors don't care whether there's incentives or not.
Yeah, I think it depends on the fuel source and the timeline. So the Inflation Reduction Act was repealed in part. It was a massive piece of legislation with hundreds of pages of different provisions. And so it was sort of sliced up and repealed piece by piece. And then there was also this phase out timeline. So as long as you can build a project between now and essentially 2030, you'll still get those tax credits as long as they enter construction by mid-year this year, 2026, and complete that project by about 2029. And that's for the solar and wind components of it. For the batteries, they actually extended it even further. And that spoke to the interest and the importance of batteries, where I forget the exact year, but it's something like the mid-2030s that they can still get tax credits on that. And they're significant.
Some interesting politics in that.
We'll be retired by then. We'll definitely need batteries.
We can hope. Yeah. Batteries, we can hope.
Batteries for your hearing aids and everything else.
Hey, man. You know, I'll take it. So, you know, in a very basic way here, Michael, for people who, you know, don't really pay much attention to this, the way that these big battery farms work is, you know, basically got a bunch of, you know, big batteries lined up there in a row. They have power fed into them. You know, they get electricity, I guess, just like, you know, we would get it in our homes and our businesses, just on a much larger scale. And they take in that power at a low rate. And it can come from wind, it can come from solar, it can come from gas, whatever. And they'll take that in at a lower rate that they're paying for that electricity, and then they sell it back. Is that right? When, you know, prices go up a little bit because of, you know, congestion in the lines and the need for electricity?
Yeah, that's right. And one of the funny things about these large scale battery projects is that they're actually the same exact technology that you have on your phone. So, excuse me. So a battery will basically be made up of a bunch of lithium ion cells. And so it's kind of like one of those power banks that you connect your phone to, where you charge that power bank and bring in some electricity, store that electricity, and then maybe you're on a plane on a long flight and you need to plug in your phone when you need it later. And yeah, the economics of it are, you buy when prices are low. They might be negative because there's a lot of solar on the grid or wind on the grid. And then you sell in the evening when the price of electricity is much higher. That's this kind of arbitrage in energy market. There's also what used to be a much larger market is shrinking in size of these different grid products. And that's, you know, to regulate the frequency of the grid, and starts to get a little bit more complicated.
But it does stabilize the grid to have these batteries there, you know, and state government has acknowledged this. ERCOT has acknowledged that, man, these batteries are really good at getting in there and just plugging holes when those, you know, supply and demand lines start to get real close to one another.
That's right. Yeah. They can really save a grid during potential brownout or blackout. And I've heard it described by some folks that transmission lines send power through space, right, from point A to point B. But batteries can send power through time, right, from 12 p.m. when you charge through to 8 p.m. when you discharge. So that's one way to kind of think about it.
Yeah, interesting, too, how you see how people are getting in on this. And they're getting creative in some cases, Michael. I had no idea until I started, you know, doing some research on this. So there are places in Texas, and I guess probably elsewhere, where they're actually utilizing used EV car batteries that have been swapped out on, let's say, a Tesla.
Nissan Leafs. I think they were Nissans.
Yeah, and they got a bunch of these lined up, and they're able to create a battery farm just out of that.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, after an EV is through its useful life, there's sometimes a lot of juice left in that battery that you can squeeze, and it can make sense economically.
Yeah, we did a story. You didn't see that?
I haven't seen
that episode of Inside Texas Politics.
I'll have to start watching Inside Texas Politics.
We'll get you a VHS tape of it so you can
we get paid by how many sure times we say Inside Texas Politics?
We can set that up. Hey, let me ask you this, Michael. At what point is you know, 1,100 projects in the pipeline here. At what point is Texas built out for batteries?
Like saturated.
Saturated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the million-dollar questions. It's similar to in data centers, what's been called more of a trillion-dollar question, which is at what point are we oversupplied? And I think you're going to get different answers from a lot of different people. You could argue that to some extent we're oversupplied right now, as evidenced by the fact that battery storage developers have really had an awful couple of years. So we talked earlier about how there's been this sort of miracle of much lower wholesale power prices in Texas. That doesn't necessarily mean total power prices, because they're spending money on poles and wires and all these different things. But the wholesale markets have been declining in the last year. And that's actually just been this huge loss for battery developers, because they're on the flip side of that. When power prices are spiking, they're making huge profits. When they're low, they're maybe losing money. And for the last 2 years, battery revenues from this different arbitrage and these different markets we were talking about have been quite low. There's a question of how that's going to change in the future, and that depends on your forecast of how much demand there's going to be. If you believe the transmission operators and ERCOT that there's going to be these hundreds of gigawatts of data center demand, then there's just going to be this huge gulf in how much power is actually available there.
Yeah, that makes me wonder too, though. I mean, you track both ends of this, Michael. Are we going to have enough power here in Texas as we go through the next 5 years, 10 years? Because, yeah, you see these ambitious plans to build electricity generation, but you see some equally, if not more, ambitious plans to build energy consumption, these huge data centers. And we've got a lot of migration coming in.
I'm always a little bit skeptical of forecasts, and we don't produce our own forecasts partly because of that, where there's just all these famous stories of forecasts gone wrong. My favorite is in 2008, the Wall Street Journal polled the world's leading economists to ask when would or was the United States in a recession. More than 60% of them said, nope, not in a recession, don't see one coming. And we were already in a recession by that point. So sometimes you don't even know what you're in.
Yeah.
And I think with power markets, you see a similar dynamic where everybody's got a different forecast of how much demand there's going to be. That depends on whether you believe that AI is going to continue to grow and whether it keeps getting more and more productive, or whether you see it as a technology that hallucinates and can barely do anything productive. And that's its own debate, whether you think there's an AI bubble and all the money is going to go away tomorrow, or whether you think that we're reaching artificial general intelligence in a couple years and there's going to be even more trillions of dollars put into it. And then on the power demand side, there's questions of policy. A year ago or so, Texas lawmakers tried to pass a series of these sort of draconian laws that really made no economic sense, where they were saying, we want to block these solar projects. We want to make it really hard to permit them in Texas, which is famous for its great permitting laws.
We remember, yes.
And so I think there's a question of whether, I think it's 2 years from now, because you all, your legislative session meets every 2 years, whether there's a similar set of bills that try to essentially tap down the amount of power supply and do what you could call the opposite of energy abundance. So I think there's just a lot of question marks, and I guess I don't pretend to be able to predict the future, but I'm following all the dynamics and as curious as everybody.
Well, Michael, on that thread, my last question is, you know, this is a success story right now with Texas leading the nation in producing battery storage. But how concerned are you along that same thread that politics could derail all of this?
Yeah, I'm really concerned with it. And it's at a federal level. It's at a state level. It's also at a local level. So at a federal level, what we've seen from the Trump administration is a really bizarre approach to energy policy, where you have folks in the administration like Doug Burgum, who was a former governor of North Dakota, that when he was governor, he oversaw this huge build out of energy in North Dakota. And as a result, North Dakota was the only state in the country that over the last 5 years saw their electricity prices actually decline because there was so much abundance of electricity. And now Burgum and the administration are trying to block energy projects. So there's wind projects that are under construction that they've halted. They've said, hey, stop building this. And that is going to result in higher power prices. They're doing all these different things to try to block different projects. A lot of their policies are even criticized by fossil fuel producers who say, hey, what are you doing? Like, we got to just build as much of this stuff as possible. Let's be truly all of the above. But a lot of their energy policies are really restrictive. And so that's happening at the federal level. But all the way down to the local level, you see people across the political spectrum, right and left, that are opposing these projects, that are saying, hey, I don't want this project in my backyard. I don't want a solar farm or a gas project or a data center in my backyard. And I think that's an even bigger dynamic and potentially could throttle the supply of electricity even more. So I think we are entering a period where we could have energy shortages. And I think policymakers, honestly, across the aisle are really exacerbating that and really led by probably the administration at the top of the country, leaders up there.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens in this next Texas legislative session. And I know a lot of folks, especially in the green power industry here in Texas, take a real deep breath before each one of those sessions begins, at least for the past several ones here. Michael, it's fascinating to get the bird's eye view, and it's amazing too how granular you all get looking into what is happening here in Texas with regard to electricity. It is it's a lot of information, but you all do a really good job of plotting it all out. Really appreciate you taking the time to kind of explain it all to us. And one of these days we'll have to do a follow-up on this because it's moving pretty fast. And the next time...
At the Tea House in Boulder, right?
The Tea House in Boulder. We'll come see you. What is the name of it again?
The Dinshabe Tea House.
Regular spelling, right?
Yeah.
My name is Dinshabe.
Of course. It is... If you haven't been to Boulder, or if you have been to Boulder and you didn't try it out, it is an amazing place. I can never remember the place where it was built. It was overseas in Europe and Eurasia, and they took it apart piece by piece, moved it to Boulder, put it back together again.
Wow.
It's a really ornate place, and like a tea menu. I love tea. A tea menu that just goes pages and pages. I mean, you can get all kinds.
Wow.
It's an amazing place, and great food, too.
Well, I'd love to host you all here.
It sounds like a sponsorship has...
Payroll here? What is this? Come on.
Well, I appreciate you all having me on, and this is a great conversation, and look forward to having some tea or a beer in Boulder next time you're here.
Or maybe we should come on over to the other side and do a workout every now and then and possibly have a protein drink.
Right.
We could probably use it, Michael. Thank you for being such a good role model.
And also for our listeners and our viewers who want to see the data that he collects and shares, CleanView, CleanView.co. A lot of great information on there. Michael, thanks for being on the program with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.